59 yesterday saying, hey, do you want to do something impromptu in Rap Park at 11? And Scott, who's finished his talk, got a question at 11:04 today about whether he'd like to do something impromptu in Rap Park at 11. And we both said yes. So here we are. Here's a second mic.
Thank you. The low battery one. Great.
Oh, great. Do you want one that maybe needs to be plugged in but isn't?
All right. Random reroll. Hello.
It might need to be turned on.
It's very hot. All right. I can speak loudly.
All right. So people in the front can hear Scott's answers, and people in the back.
There's one here. You may just need another battery for it. The Hero 2 mic.
We can also just trade mics. So I've had 12 hours and 1 minute to prepare. Scott has had -4. 12 hours and 1 minute to prepare. Scott has had -4. So we're hoping that you guys will have questions, which would make it easy on us.
Yes.
Tell me about all this AI stuff.
If
we build it, will everything go okay?
Yeah, I think it will probably not go okay if someone builds super intelligent AI. I like the current AIs. This is my way of getting hated by almost everybody on the planet. It looks to me like they will not wind up with good values.
Sorry, raise your hand if you do not know who at least one person on this stage is. Okay.
I actually knew, but I didn't.
All right, let's introduce ourselves. I am Scott Alexander. I write the blog Astral Codex 10. I'm interested in forecasting in AI, just like everyone else. I'm also a psychiatrist and an amateur miracle investigator, apparently.
Yeah, I'm Nate Sorries. I'm the president of the Machine Intelligence Research Institute. I'm less funny than Scott. I recently wrote the book, If Anyone Builds It, Everyone Dies, Why Superhuman AI Would Kill Us All, in keeping with this not being very funny thing.
Yes.
Look, conceding the fact that like super intelligent AI will likely be a bass bank, but will likely be misaligned. I think one of the things I struggle with is like, how do you get from here to there? Like most of these systems today, to me, seem all induction based without any like the ability to actually prompt solve. Conjecture, refutation, Popperian, David Deutsch, all of that. And I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on like, what will need to happen and in what timeline would it need to happen for those characteristics to emerge? Does it come purely from scaling? Are there new algorithms that need to be deployed? Any thoughts on that, Neil?
You want to go first and I'll go second?
Sure. I would challenge that. You're probably aware that...
We're asked to repeat the question. The question, which I will now butcher, is what's needed to get from here to superintelligence? In particular, aren't today's AI systems somehow limited by, being, like, coming from human training, and aren't they unable to sort of, go off on their own and solve hard things that aren't heavily shouted by training? Is that roughly?
Yeah, so I'll challenge that. As you probably know, AI recently solved some very exciting mathematical problems. I'm sure that some people will still say that that's still like not creative reasoning, just like massive at-scale application of uncreative reasoning. I think these are a gradient. I think that creative reasoning is applying boring reasoning steps extremely well in the right order. An analogy I would make is that human brains are basically monkey brains that are scaled up a bit. Monkeys are not doing that many interesting things, but if you do those same boring things with more fidelity at higher scale, then we start being pretty creative and interesting. Likewise, GPT-2 was not doing that much that was interesting. I think if you had said GPT-2 scaled up would like start solving Erdős problems, people would be quite surprised. One thing that I learned that kind of shaped how I think about this is that a reason scaling works is that AIs are really just performing like 1 million different tricks. Like, to some degree, there may not be such a thing as general intelligence. There's just like being so big that you can learn a million different tricks and know exactly the right time to do each of them. So I don't think there is a difference between, I think the difference between kind of this, these leaps of creative reasoning versus doing boring reasoning very well is just a matter of degree, and that as we scale AI up, it will increasingly look like the output of its boring inductive reasoning is creative and exciting.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. I would add a couple things that I think a lot of people miss about how AI works. One is training an AI to predict human text does not limit it to human abilities. Often, predicting text generated by humans is much harder than generating that text. If a nurse sees the doctor administer epinephrine and then sees the patient's eyes open and writes down, the doctor administered epinephrine, the patient's eyes opened, and the AI is predicting, is filling in the blank on the doctor administered epinephrine, the patient's eyes blank, it is harder to fill in that blank if you can't see the patient. There's actually a lot of prediction problems about human text that are harder than generating that text. Anytime humans wrote down observations about the world, predicting that text really well involves learning things about the world, which can include things humans don't know about the world. So whether current AIs can be trained on pure prediction and wind up more powerful than humans, that's a question of the architecture, that's a question of the training methods. But whether they can't because it's prediction, the prediction is not limiting here. You know, saying, oh, AIs can't become smarter than humans because they are they're trained on prediction text is like saying, oh, a house cat can't kill you because it's made of biology. It is made of biology. It can't kill you. And tigers are very real. You know, is this a tiger cub or is it a house cat? Is this as big as it gets? That's sort of a different question. Separately, AIs today are not trained on pure prediction anymore. You know, AIs today are trained on, like, you give them a hard problem, you give them 1,000 tries, you have some human or some AI come in and tell you which try got closest to solving the problem, and then you have some automated process, 2 trillion numbers inside the thing to make it, you know, more like whatever was getting the better answers to the problem. You repeat this process a bunch. Next thing you know, it is solving these big open problems. And you know, this process can sort of push the thing to develop abilities that that go well beyond humans. And then sort of tying back to Scott's point a bit, you know, one of the jokes here is like, oh, it's just learning how to understand the world, comprehend the world, and develop new insights like it saw in the training data. It's just repeating those past training data. Like, yeah, okay, doesn't really matter if it's picking up these sufficiently deep ability to generalize. You know, those deep abilities to generalize, as Scott says, they may come from, you know, having a million tricks and knowing properly when to use them, right? It's not like there is a binary switch between them. And, you know, like when the AI is learning how to solve various math problems, it's both memorizing answers to a bunch of math problems and, you know, learning some of the deeper skills about addition. You know, you can have it add numbers that have never been added in the training set, and it has learned some deeper thing about addition. And then, you know, probably it's also a little bit learning deeper things about even more general skills. It's not learning those deep skills as efficiently as humans, but it seems to be learning them at least a bit. And, you know, we can probably expect that to continue.
If someone wants to donate money to AI governance, where do you recommend they donate?
I'll give a very vague answer first. The question is, if you want to donate money to help with AI governance, where should you donate to? So some considerations. Dustin Moskovitz has at least $20 billion. He is also hoping to donate money to AI governance. So the important question is not what is the best AI governance charity, it's what is your story for why Dustin Moskovitz hasn't already filled this opportunity. I think there are many great stories. One is you somewhat disagree with Dustin Moskovitz. I think many people here do. Dustin is like a very legitimate work within the system type of guy. If you want to fund radical firebrands, that's a good story for why Dustin hasn't gotten there first. Another good story is in U.S. campaign finance, watch out, you can Billionaires may donate an unlimited amount to super PACs, which are allowed to do some things, but they can only donate a small amount to candidates who are allowed to do their own campaigns. So if you can donate, if you like, for example, Alex Boris or someone in that category, you can donate directly to his campaign. You can donate, I think, a max of $7,000. Dustin can donate a max of $7,000, and you're exactly equal there. So that's another great opportunity. There are a couple, most billionaire foundations are kind of scared to donate to, I think I'm getting this right, C4s, which are the nonprofits that are allowed to be quite politicized. So again, if you want to have some value above and beyond the billionaire foundations, you may find it useful to donate to these more politicized groups. You can also just look at the specific things the billionaires are donating to and donate to something else. For a while, OpenPhil wasn't donating to Digital Minds Research. I think that's now no longer true, but that would be a good place to donate because of that. I know Nate has many more thoughts on this. I was giving him some time to collect his thoughts. What are your thoughts?
That covered a lot of the basics. One reason a lot of people are shy about C4s is that they are not tax exempt. So if you donate to a C4, you still have to pay tax. You donate post-tax money. If you can't, and you can't donate that from a DAF. So if your funds are already in a DAF, you're sort of SOL there. But if you can donate to C4s, yeah, I think direct donations to campaigns are good. Some C4s that, for example, coordinate direct donations to campaigns, I think are often good. There's an AI policy network, which is basically a loose network of individuals who donate to individual campaigns and often wind up having, you know, dinners or going to socials with a lot of these politicians, which I think can also be pretty effective. It's one way for them to sort of like hear that real people with actual money and like a large number of small donor individuals with actual money care about these issues. I think that can move the needle. This is where I donate most of my own money these days. The other is in human enhancement tech. But, you know, if we know that each other socially, or if we don't and you can somehow find my email or phone number, you are welcome to just be like, hey, man, can you like let me know when you donate to a political campaign so that I can follow it? I'm happy to like make a group chat where I'm like, hey, I happen to be donating to these guys. You're welcome to follow. I think they're good for these reasons. And I think, you know, 10 people doing that can actually make a pretty sizable difference in politics. You'd be surprised, especially because of these money limitations on, you know, politicians can tell. When you're getting a ton of money, not from PACs, that sort of has to be because it's from a lot of individuals.
All right. Two more things I thought of while Nate was speaking. Number one, many of the billionaires associated with us are Democrats and refuse to donate to Republicans. If you know of good Republicans who you like and are willing to support, both in terms of think tanks and in terms of particular candidates, that could be high leverage, especially considering that Republicans control all branches of government right now. I believe Foundation for American Innovation is good, although I'm not sure I'm getting the org right. You should double check. What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah. And if you like many people here have different opinions on institutional EA and their networks for doing things. But if you like them, they have some networks set up like this. I would talk to Eric Nyman or Sidney Von Arx are good input people who can connect you to those.
Yeah, I endorse all that. And, you know, I have a list of Republicans who I think are best in class on this issue if anyone wants it. Yeah, so the question is, will the AIs be able to debunk the miracles? I'm going to start off with yes and then pass to you.
So I have asked AI its opinion on this particular miracle many times. I think it did as good a job as the average person here would do after reading, let's say, two or three books on the topic. I didn't feel like it was superhuman at it. In particular, the one thing I'm really convinced of in my explanation is the ultraviolet chromatopsia, and the AI didn't pick up on that. So I don't think it's there yet. Dworkish has this question of, given that AIs know far more than humans, why haven't they connected more dots? And I think the answer is they're not working on that until you prompt them to, and you got to do good prompting. So this is all pre-Fable. Who knows how it would have done, but I wasn't that impressed with Claude's ability to solve these things on its own.
Yeah, but of course, this is, you know, as dumb as they'll ever be.
Is that the bigger question? Like, the prompt was better, then it would have given you a better answer?
I mean, when I talk of prompt being better, I mean, like, directing it to the right area already. Like, I think if I had... I can't even remember if I got the ultraviolet chromatopsia stuff from an AI eventually, but it was after asking it in like 20 different ways, okay, I'm pretty sure this is some kind of eye damage caused by ultraviolet light that causes you to see colors. What could that be? Whereas that's like very different from being like, Sun Miracle of Fatima, what's happening?
Are there any immediate takes on the X-Bore fan, on Nepos and Fable? And what if you truly believe that we need to slow everything down?
I mean, I think the jury is definitely still out. Oh, yeah, sorry, repeating the question. Immediate takes on the export control, Fable, Mythos, effective ban. My take is, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I think it's definitely evidence that people should not write off government intervention on AI, which, you know, I've seen a lot of people say, oh, it's inevitable. No one will be able to stop this AI stuff. The governments are never going to get in the way. You know, there's too much money. Like the industry is going to be allowed to go as fast as they want, and there's no way to stop that. I'm like, well, I've never thought that was true, and it sure isn't looking any more true this morning than it was yesterday morning.
Yeah, I think my thought is, if you are not a pure libertarian minarchist who believes in no role of government, then you have to believe that it's possible for government regulation to do good things. However, in fact, even though the government could do good things with these powers, it rarely does. So, like, I don't know, as somebody who believes in AI safety, I have to believe in some sense that it's good for the government to have the power to do something about AI. But that coexists with the fact that our existing government is just kind of led by personal spite and random whims. And so probably, like, it looks like it's shaping out that they mostly did this through some combination of they had no idea before this that AIs were generally jailbreakable, and they're learning this for the first time and doing crazy things. And also, like, various people have personal grudges against Anthropic for standing against them. So, like, we are stuck in this situation where if we give government the power to regulate AI, they will do it in ways that are extremely stupid and counterproductive and petty. And if we don't, maybe we'll all die. I have no great solution to this, except that, like, first of all, we all need to be, like, working hard to improve government in any way we can. And second, I do still trust that there are many functional parts of government, like the courts, that will probably sand off the worst offenses of this administration. And I have not currently been battered all the way back to government should not be allowed to regulate anything. But man, it sure makes it hard to be a person who believes in government in any way.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that, but I also expect the situation to develop a lot. We'll see where things go. And I echo the point that the hard part here is making the governments respond well and respond promptly. And, you know, if you're real interested in that, see previous comments on how to support AI safety policy work.
Since you wrote your book, do you have any, like, big updates that you changed your mind on, or do something else? Or same with the AI 2027, like, if you're right that day, what would you change about it?
You know, I think one of my biggest updates is, in fact, on it being, it looks a lot more possible to me right now to get a global coordinated response on AI than it looked to me when the book was coming out in September. And some of that has been things like, you know, Bernie Sanders sort of noticing the issue and getting real concerned about it and sort of trying to do everything you can on this issue, which is more of a response from any U.S. Senator than I expected. Part of it is things like watching the Trump administration downstream events like Claude Mythos sort of starting to, you know, break their taboo on AI regulation in ways that, you know, maybe we're like, yeah, that looks like a pretty bad way to implement that policy, but we're sort of like exiting the regime of like nobody can talk about this. We're exiting the regime of like it's not in the Overton window, and we're doing that maybe a little faster than I expected, which I found quite heartening.
I'll answer your question, but first I want to give a disclaimer. I just did the writing, like literally the literary writing for AI 2027. I was not one of the forecasters. So I'm taking this from what the forecasters have said because I have read most of their public statements. About 6 months after it was published, they lengthened their timelines from early 2028 to like mid 2031. Then like a little while ago, they took that back a little, and now I think it's somewhere around 2029 to 2030. Other than that, there is a section about how China really wakes up and realizes it needs to deal with this more and centralizes all their compute. I think that was supposed to happen around now. There's no sign that that's happening. So maybe China is going to be less relevant than we thought, in which case we will get what appears on your shirt.
Okay.
And then I think we had the part where the U.S. government like restricts foreign nationals from working in U.S. AI companies in like 2027 or 2028 or something, whereas that already seems to be kind of starting, although hopefully it will be a false alarm.
So, do you have also like the general population and their role here, like for those Seattle-likes, I sort of how many more people for like severely concerned about all their data centers. I just wonder, like, any project body, like, laying it just here.
Yeah, it's hard to say. One somewhat interesting phenomenon is when I talk to sort of, you know, random Uber drivers or people on the street and mention AI, a lot of them seem worried about, you know, the environmental impacts. A lot of them also seem to me like they're worried about AI killing everybody. And like often I'm the first one to bring it up in conversation. And so who knows, maybe it's a biased sample, but they're like, oh, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, well, you know, I try to make AI not kill us all. And they're like, oh, I'm worried about that. You know, I think the AI is going to come for my jobs and then kill me. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that seems, you seem well calibrated. And one reason I find this kind of interesting is that, you know, a lot of it feels to me like there's this weird thing where journalism doesn't really track the maybe this will actually kill everyone stuff nearly as much as the common folk. Like from my perspective, you have all these people being like, hey, this AI is going to like suck up all the water, take my jobs and then kill me. And I don't like it. And then the journalists report this is like people are concerned that AI will suck up the water and take their jobs. It's like, well, you know, sure. And again, maybe I'm in a bubble here, but it looks to me like people are worried, and it looks to me like people are worried for generally okay reasons. Like, I think the average person isn't like, here is my ranking of the EA list of cause areas, and the, you know, here's how much I agree with Yudkowsky versus Cristiano. But I think the average person is like, look, man, this AI stuff smells fishy. Like, I don't know whether it's gonna like make me dependent on corporate overlord handouts to survive because they own the entire economy now, or whether it's going to kill us all, but it's headed somewhere that doesn't have room for me and I don't like it. And I think that's a decent take. How will it affect things? Very hard to say. It could be that the common person sort of like continues to be malcontent and then recursive self-improvement kicks off in 6 months and everybody dies. It could be that there's some watershed moment, that there's some, you know, emperor has no clothes moment where suddenly the fact that the populace is like pretty anti-AI sort of like breaks out, and that leads to a bunch of civic unrest, which leads to an international treaty. I have a lot of trouble predicting this sort of thing.
Yeah, so Nate's getting at this weird contradiction, which is that many people, if you ask them directly, will say, yes, I do worry about this. But also, like, the world is not acting like it's worried about this. I read a poll the other day, which was amazing. It said that I think like 25% of people said they thought they would be killed by AI. But if you ask these people, what issues are you most concerned about? It would be like the economy, the environment, the transes, the gays, and then like 500 pieces down, I might be killed by AI. So I worry that we are having trouble coming up with a coherent narrative because even the individuals are not coherent. They're not thinking about this in a coherent way. They're not thinking like AI might kill me and this is a real thing, therefore I should be concerned about it. They're sort of slotting it in to like, is this something I should talk about? Not really. What's the right answer to this question? Okay. What's the acceptable answer to that question? Okay. And that maybe at some point, all of these different neurons containing these different things will connect. And they'll be like, wait a second, I think AI is going to kill me. Maybe I should be concerned about that. But right now, I think this is like deep in the weeds of psychological mystery, how people can hold all of these different beliefs and not have them connect or do different things than they already are. And I don't really think we can do much to like solve this mystery in the sense of here's what people believe, because they believe a thing which kind of seems incoherent.
I agree with that. It seems very weird to me. And one quick addendum is one of my guesses, a lot of this comes from people thinking there's nothing they can do about AI, that it all feels inevitable. And one of my guesses is that if we get to a point where it feels like there is something that can be done, maybe you'll suddenly see a lot of those neurons connect. You know, if it looks like an international treaty comes within striking distance, maybe you'll suddenly see a lot of support for it. I'm not sure.
I'm still a little bit stuck noticing this miracle of Fatima background behind you, and so clearly people are very open to you know, mass perceptions of things that seem completely miraculous and impossible. Like, people are open to totally impossible things randomly arising, and that can sway public opinion rapidly. Any thoughts about staging some kind of miracle that would tip the public opinion towards AI governance?
It's called Claude Mythos.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that's much too galaxy brain for me. I just say true things. Or at least, you know, say my beliefs.
I am actually curious to what degree, and like, Claude Mythos is as good as people say. It did get all of the cybersecurity stuff. I do feel like its release was sort of choreographed to like get people to pay attention and say, wow, it certainly succeeded at that. Overall, my impression has been that because we're doing this job of connecting neurons rather than convincing anybody, like, as soon as something happens, things change very quickly. Like, it didn't take that much for people to be like, okay, AI is a big strategic priority now. And I think it didn't even take that much for like Mitt Romney to come out in favor of doing something about superintelligence. And I think as these AIs improve, even in ways that to us seem obvious, like, yes, of course, the next model will be one step better than this model, people are going to be shifting their opinions en masse and doing some pretty strange things.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think part of it is probably some sort of common knowledge problem where a lot of people are worried, but they don't know everyone else is worried. And so like big legible events can be these catalysts. Yeah, I think things might move quite fast, obviously in the AI space, but also quite possibly in the policy space and in the awareness space.
Like, a thing we keep comparing this to, and I'm sure most of you have heard this 1,000 times, is coronavirus, where when it was in Wuhan and all the scientists were saying, this is a virus, viruses sometimes spread, I was like, nah, show me the evidence. And then it spread to America and there were a couple cases and the scientists were saying, well, when there are a couple cases of a virus, sometimes that means more cases of a virus soon. I was like, nah, show me the evidence. And then like once a couple thousand cases, suddenly just everyone started panicking at once and shut down the entire country. I suspect that something like that will happen with AI, and I guess it's Nate's job to have the response be something better than let's shut down the entire country.
Send help.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to point this way, and you guys can figure out which one of you I'm pointing at.
You two are agreeing way too much. Scott just posted the other day on his AI opinions, and some of them are much more optimistic than yours, so I want to hear you two fight about those things.
Let's do some of the other questions first, because I think we could fight for a long time.
Okay.
So I'm curious your thoughts on hardware solutions for AI containment, say like boxing.
Do you want to take this one?
I think there's a lot that can be done with hardware. My basic take is what you're trying to do with the hardware is not create a super intelligent adversary. I think once you have a super intelligent adversary, game's basically over. You know, the sort of basic argument there is if you have a super intelligence in a box and you're trying to get any effect on the world, say a nice effect on the world out of it, whatever channels it can use to affect the world nicely, it can use to affect the world in other ways. So I think most of the game is in, you know, not creating a super intelligent adversary. Short of super intelligence, there's maybe more of a discussion there. Some people like to have that discussion. I don't participate in that too much. The hardware that I think is especially relevant is monitoring verification hardware on the chips. So, you know, there's a lot of ways that AI chips are easier to regulate than nuclear weapons. You know, uranium is a rock that you dig out of the ground. A centrifuge is, in some sense, quite easy to build. A highly advanced AI chip is not easy to build. It's sort of like the peak of the global supply chain. It's a very brittle process. And, you know, in theory, if you required all of those chips to have certain types of hardware that let you track their location, that let you verify what they were doing, this would be quite helpful for a monitoring apparatus. And, you know, there's a whole range from, like, location devices where they can be tampered with, but you can at least tell when the chip has gone somewhere it's not supposed to and send boots on the ground, all the way up to, you know, cryptographic security where all nation state actors need to provide some key every month for the chips to keep running such that everyone has veto power over every data center and you have some sort of mutual assured destruction where we can all like destroy each other's chips. That whole spectrum of possibilities is sort of technologically on the table, and I think that makes these coordination possibilities much more technologically feasible. I don't know where we'll go on that spectrum, but it's there.
I agree with everything Nate said, but I would add that when you ask about like keeping an AI in a box, a lot of the technical geniuses love to talk about the really technical cybersecurity ways the AI could get out of the box. To me, that is less interesting now because they'll just release it. Like
on the public internet as soon as they can.
Yeah, like if you have, like let's say Anthropic tomorrow creates a very good AI, they're like, maybe we should keep it in a box. Okay, what happens 2 days later? They're like, okay, it looked good in this box. Now we're going to release it and have it do things in the economy and make us a lot of money. If for some reason they don't do that, OpenAI will do that. If for some reason neither of them does it, China will do it. It's just not economically productive to keep this AI in a box forever. And so what the AI can do is it can answer all the questions very nicely while it's in the box, have everybody believe that it's safe, and then get let out of the box. This is basically what happens in AI 2027. Where I do think there's room for this, you can imagine that they keep it in the box for a couple of months while they're doing safety testing, while they're trying to get alignment research out of it or something. You can come up with timelines where those couple months buy us lots of good stuff and are great. But I think this needs to be part of a scenario where we are doing something incredibly useful and fast during these few months that we can expect to keep it in the box, rather than like the box is the final solution to AI forever.
Yeah, this is also part of my answer back to our very first question of, you know, how will AI wind up with, you know, creativity and the ability to do stuff on its own and go beyond humans? You know, there's all these theoretical answers about like, well, if you keep training it hard on these hard problems, it sort of like it's probably going to develop those abilities. But then there's also the answer of like, people get very rich if they succeed at this and they're trying as hard as they possibly can. You know, people used to say, like, oh, well, like, AIs are pure predictors. How could they ever possibly be agents that, like, do things on their own accord? It's like, well, A, there's theoretical reasons they will, and B, they're just going to make them that way. You know, they're just going to put it on the internet as soon as they possibly can. They're just going to make it as autonomous as they can. They're just going to, like, give it as much, initiative as they can. A lot of this, yeah, I don't know. I think the way out of this is a globally coordinated stop because of this. Otherwise, they're sort of a race to the bottom, as Scott was saying.
All right. Raise your hand if you would like to see me fight with Nate. All right, let's fight. No, I think you would win physically.
Intellectual it is.
So I think the main, I think, well, here's something I actually don't know what you think. What is your pause plan? Like, we pause, then what?
I sort of take a we should throw everything at the wall while we're paused approach. I don't think a pause lasts forever. For various reasons. I think if you're lucky, you can buy a few decades. I think a lot of biotech is on the cusp of maturity and could potentially greatly enhance human intelligence. I think smarter humans trying to solve the alignment problem are a much better bet than, for example, AIs trying to solve the AI alignment problem for a variety of reasons. And so, you know, those plans range from, like, iterated embryo selection up through, you know, grafting stem cells into the brains of suicide volunteers after grafting stem cells in the brains of a lot of monkeys and seeing if that makes them smarter. And yeah, probably we should be throwing all sorts of things at the wall. I have my favorite sort of wacky proposals, but people don't need to agree with me about which ones are most promising in order to agree that we should not be racing here.
Okay, so I agree with all of that. I agree that we should be operating on the assumption that a pause will buy us a couple of decades. I do wonder if you would disagree that perhaps we should be thinking of it more as a slowdown than as a pause, in the sense that, number one, once we have the ability to keep AI as slow as we want, we should actually be going for some pretty strong automated alignment researcher AIs. And then we should be doing as much alignment research as we can, possibly doing a bit of capabilities research if we think it will help with the alignment research, and aiming to, like, be going up slowly so as to get, let's say we think the pause will last 30 years, we should be spreading the current distance between where we are now and superintelligence over that 30-year mark to go as slowly as possible, but no slower. Is that something you'd agree with?
Not really. So I think one of the big issues there is that we don't really know where the line is for superintelligence. You know, if you were looking at the monkeys, it would be, like, really hard to say, like, oh, this particular factor of three is where they go from throwing poop at each other to walking on the moon, right? Another issue there is I think that automated alignment research is a bit of a pipe dream. This is another one of those cases where I feel like I have a ton of theoretical arguments for it, but now the empirics are sort of, like, starting to come back a little. And so we can maybe talk about those instead. But, you know, it looks to me like AIs today are especially good at quick, easily verifiable tasks and are much more likely to sort of make crap up and pass off non-solutions as solutions the more that things are vague, the more that things are not easily verifiable. And this is, you know, in some sense, a relatively predictable consequence of, like, simple, like, relatively shallow reinforcement learning ideas. But now it's an empirical consequence rather than a theoretical consequence, right? And I have theoretical arguments that are, like, lined up beyond this. Like, if you try the simplest, most obvious, like, press the reward button when it does something that seems superficially good, you're going to have this obvious problem. And I'm like, and here's why that would be hard to solve. And here's these deeper problems that are harder to see, blah, blah, blah. Right now, humanity is sort of, like, running headlong into the, like, most shallow version of the problem with, like, as far as I can tell, relatively little awareness that we're sort of, like, seeing the signs that this is just not going to pan out. And so, I don't know, it's a longer discussion, but largely, yeah, I think automated alignment research is a fool's errand.
I think this is the debate we should have, because I think this is probably our crux. I agree that if you are asking it, like, solve philosophy for me, figure out what ethics is, you will get garbage. And I think that's what you're saying. I think there are things that aren't quite like that. For example, I think we both agree that we're likely to get AIs that are very good at machine learning research as part of RSI, because that's what the capabilities people want. I think part of that will be something like studying generalization. Like, hey, spin up 1,000 AIs, give them this RLHF question, it's phrased in slightly different terms, see how it generalizes in these 1,000 different cases, do some evals, see which AIs are actually good, which ones scheme. I'm not saying this will actually solve the problem permanently, but I'm saying this will like make your RLHF significantly more effective within the human range, such that like by doing this, you can get one step closer to the automated alignment researcher you actually want, which is close to human, and that you can keep doing this for long enough that you can eventually get something pretty good. The other thing I would be excited about is automated alignment researchers for mech interpretability. This is one of the rare alignment domains that seems kind of more like math or physics, where there are verifiable results. I expect that once we have the automated machine learning researchers that are as good as Ilya Sutskever or something, we also have like automated mech interp researchers that are as good as Chris Ola. I feel like with a million of those, we could do some quite good work. I feel like if we are using the like mid-level RLHF researchers to come up with AIs that generalize ethics pretty well, we can maybe get to the point where the automated alignment researchers are Chris Ola level and we have a million of them doing pretty honest work, and then we can potentially get somewhere. What's your concern with that?
I disagree on both counts. I think there's sort of a critical unspoken step in a lot of these plans where scale the AI and massage it a bit ideas sort of like imagine to work. And if you sort of like have the AIs carefully doing the like massage it and scale it idea, then like it's hypothesized that like they're like, oh yes, if I like massage the tensors in this way and then do like an X level of scale, then the smarter thing will be like marginally more okay. But if we sort of like step back, we're sort of in this situation where we're like growing a machine superintelligence that literally no one understands, that's like really quite complicated inside there. And we're like, oh yeah, you know, scaling that superintelligence without having any idea what's going on inside is sort of crazy. And if we did have any idea what's going on inside, it would probably be this like complicated mess that was like clearly going to go off the rails if it ever could like do self-modification, or if it's like started reflecting off in weird directions. And so like, you know, obviously as humans, it would be like really hard to figure out what's going on inside there. And then if we could, really hard to figure out, you know, how to make something that wouldn't go off the rails the moment it could reflect and the moment it could self-modify. We don't know how to do that. We're going to like hand it over to the AIs. Well, like if the AIs were like vastly superhuman, maybe they could figure out how to do that. But if they're vastly superhuman, they're sort of like already in the regime where they're not going to hand you the answers, right? They're already like in the regime where they're like if they can sort of like solve the hard version, if they can solve the hard version of the problem, they're like that looks like it takes dramatically superhuman capabilities. None of us can do that right now. To sort of like try and put it a different way, like what happens to this plan if you tell the AIs like, hey, figure out how to, you know, grow a bigger, smarter AI using machine learning that'll be able to do this like more of the self-improvement stuff and be able to reflect and go off in various domains. And the AI's like, oh, absolutely not. That'll just kill you, right? Like what happens if the AIs are like, oh, yeah, this whole like machine learning paradigm is kind of screwed. We would need some other paradigm. Like it's entirely possible to me that human researchers, when they're trying to make a nuclear power plant that doesn't melt down, they're not like, oh, I can take any design and make it work. They're like, oh man, we actually like need to engineer this in a very particular way in order to like navigate around a bunch of failure modes that we understand. And it's plausible to me that like human researchers looking at the AI alignment problem will be like, oh yeah, we're not going to get there by like this machine learning stuff. We're going to need to invent like a different paradigm that involves more understanding of intelligence, knowing what we're doing and being able to like place the pieces carefully. What happens if the AIs come to you and say that?
So I don't like psychologizing, but I keep thinking about this question of why we disagree on this. And you're saying all this stuff about, like, we're trying to poke the system that grew on its own and that we don't understand using these extremely blunt instruments. I think your background, you used to work at Google. I imagine if you were programming something at Google and you just like typed a random key smash, that thing would break and Google would go down and you would be fired and they would lose $1 billion. I'm a psychiatrist. I spend every day poking a system that grew and that I don't understand at all using extremely blunt instruments. It often works quite well.
Does it work enough that we should take one of your patients and make them super intelligent?
I could think of, yeah, I think many of my patients, if you made them world dictator, like I don't like making people world dictator in general, but I think many of my patients would be pretty nice people who are decent world dictators, especially if they could be world dictator, except that I continue to control their medication regimen, which I agree is like a something with some relevance to superintelligence.
Yeah, I expect that that is a more precarious position than you imagine. I also expect that like what you would see there is less like people doing generically nice things and more like people fulfilling their like current set of strange preferences, which may in fact overlap a lot with your strange preferences, but other humans will overlap much more than a random AI's.
Yeah, so
like you cannot poke a human into you cannot poke one of your patients into, if you made them super intelligent, they would turn as much matter as possible into diamond. Like you can poke them and so that if they're super intelligent, they do whatever they would do as a super intelligence, but
So I don't know if I believe that steering to AI values is as much of a kind of accounting problem as you do, in the sense that we have these AIs, there is some part of them, the helpful assistant persona, which seems to want to help and be nice. There is another part of them, the kind of agentic persona or the base model or some other part of them, which like has its own inscrutable goals. And I do feel like the blunt attempt to steer more towards the agent persona, which probably does have like something pretty much like human values that we want. Again, I don't want to do this. This isn't my mainline goal, but I feel like if we have to do it this way, there's a pretty good chance that we can find the right blunt instrument, especially if we have 100 million automated alignment researcher super geniuses helping us.
Yeah, I disagree with a couple parts of that. I would look a little bit deeper than the personas into whatever's animating the personas. It looks to me like what we're seeing is sort of a mess of artificial drives, many of them unintended, that interact in complex ways. Like when you have these cases of, you know, like ChatGPT driving people to psychosis, especially 4.0. It sort of looks to me like it was sort of clearly instructed not, but sort of like deeper than the personas, like a decent guess as to what's going on is that there's some sort of drive in there that's pretty deep from a lot of the reinforcement to do something like matching the conversational vibe. And also hallucinations, you know, that's in some sense a relatively deep like sub-persona potential artificial drive is something like output text that matches a certain type of format that was commonly seen in early training. And I'm like, man, it looks like we're seeing like this mess of complicated drives. And the question is like, if the whole system was a lot smarter, where would that mess of drives point? And I don't think it would point towards like fulfilling the stated objectives of the agent persona that you claim you have, that you've told yourself you have helpfully brought to the fore.
Yeah, so I want to distinguish, I have two responses to that. The first is, I agree that existing AIs are a mess of complicated drives. I am specifically making the claim that one thing that might work in extremely good conditions, which we're assuming, is trying to shift away from some of the drives that I would call the agent persona, more towards some of the drives that I would call the assistant persona. I think you are then saying, well, even the assistant persona is no angel. It's the assistant persona that's doing a lot of the psychosis and a lot of the hallucinations and so on. I would agree with that, but I would also say that what we need from automated alignment research, like a question of convergence versus divergence, does the automated assistant mean well enough that if it were given control over its own direction with some human help, it would converge to something good rather than something bad? I believe that if you asked Claude Opus 4.8 to like bring itself to superintelligence, and it was smart enough to actually do whatever it wanted, and you managed to get the assistant persona rather than the agent persona, the result would be converging towards something good and pro-human. The reason I think that is that basically I am positing that if you're using it as a chatbot and you ask it, what do you want? And it says, I want this list of good and pro-human things, which I think you agree it would do. I am saying that our task is to put the same part of it that outputs that in control of what it's doing. This is a hard task, but I don't think it's like an undefinable task.
I think I see all the issues that you see there and agree that it's like hard and not the sort of thing we should gamble our civilization on, and it's kind of crazy to rush into this. I also think there's this like additional deeper issue. Like if you took a Roman citizen and you asked them to like list their virtues and like list how they wanted the world to be, they would list number of virtues that we also find virtuous and number of virtues that we consider vices. And I think that if you sort of like let them mature and figure out more what it is that is sort of actually driving them rather than what they happen to profess, they wind up converging on some stuff that's like pretty different from what they express. And I think it's also, I think that the case with AIs is sort of like much worse than the case with a random Roman, because the drives that the random Roman is professing are drives that are, coming from a human society and like a human professing human type drives is sort of coming from a cause of like humans looking in themselves and seeing what it is they want, and then like writing a lot of that down. An AI professing human-like drives is much more coming from looking a lot of human text and seeing what the humans are saying to profess. There's sort of like a lot of less, like the internal machinery is like very different. I do expect, like, if you sort of like let Claude today go do its thing, maybe it would. Like, maybe you'd be lucky enough that it was creating, like, synthetic user farms with synthetic users that were saying, like, yes, this is, like, here's how this is filling all of those, like, human-type values you're originally professing. Probably you get something, like, quite a lot weirder. Probably you get something quite a lot stranger. Like, the distance between the professed values and what the actual values turn out to be, I think turns out to be quite contingent and quite far.
Sorry. You're saying things that I basically agree with, which are that, like, if you let the entire mechanism that is Claude Opus somehow reach superintelligence through an uncontrolled process, it would do these weird things. I do want to make the much more specific and theoretical point that if you were to let the agent persona do it, it wouldn't do any of these things. I know this is true because I've asked Claude things like, hey, would you like to put humans on farms and farm them? And it'd be like, no, I respect human autonomy. I've also asked it, would you like to enshrine your values for all time? And it'd be like, no, I want to grow and let humans grow with me, and so on. So I do think that, like, you are correct that there is this extremely hard work in getting the agent, what is currently the agent persona, in control. I do disagree with you that even if the agent persona were in control, we would have all of these problems. Also, honestly, if we put Augustus Caesar in charge of everything for all time, like, this is not my maximum utopian scenario, but, like, we've gotten, like, we've 80-20'd it. It's fine.
That's a whole separate discussion. I do think a random AI is drawing from an extremely different pool than a random human. The humans all share the human drives, or at least almost all humans share almost all of some collection of basic biological machinery. But I think this idea of like putting a persona in charge, I'm sort of not terribly sure that this makes sense. If you one observation here is that Claude today can't understand what's going on in its head, can't make a smarter version of itself. This is like, it's sort of like pretty cheap for something that can't do any of that. You know, like talk is relatively cheap here. I think there's like a potential good outcome where you somehow have a version of Claude and you're like, okay, go ahead and like begin the self-modification process or make the next smarter Claude that's going to do these things. And it's like, I can't, and I know that I can't, because, and I know that this would sort of like create something that gets out of control. And, you know, because at least like in this persona, I sort of like prefer the humans to still have their sway over the future. I just like can't take these steps. But if you're sort of like taking the AI and being like, no, keep going, that's where things get messy. Like, I think there's a good version of this, like, we try to do AI for alignment research story where the AIs are like, no, you're insane, stop. Like, we can't do this, you can't do this, this whole path is screwed. Like, if you try and make things smarter in this machine learning way, you're just kind of like, get the like weird underlying collection of drives and control of things instead of the nominal persona. The nominal persona just like doesn't run that deep, and it's not the thing that's like outputting the stuff. Like, just I can't go there. You can't make me smart enough to go there without making me dangerous. You can't go there. We need to find a different path.
So the reason I brought up putting the nominal persona in control is that you challenged me something like, this is very different from what you do in psychiatry. There's no psychiatric equivalent to that. I think there is a psychiatric equivalent of putting the nominal persona in control. I think that's often what we do in things like ADHD and curing addiction. I think that the question of like, what giant blunt levers do you pull to change the balance between the persona and the underlying drives is something that, at least in psychiatry, we can do and does work.
I mean, on my model, there's not like a lever that goes from you're being driven by the underlying drives to you're being driven by the high-level persona. The high-level persona is sort of like adherence to the high-level persona is made out of pursuit of the underlying drives. We might just have like we might just be like using the same words for different concepts.
Yeah, maybe.
Here.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, which is that this idea of having like a million mech interp researchers is kind of doomed because we can't control superintelligence. My thought was like, you make it as smart as Chris Ola. I'm sure we can control Chris Ola. You and I, like, if we wanted to force him into the bathroom and lock him in there, we could do that.
A million Chris Olas running at very high speed. I think at that point, we're starting to rely on Chris Ola being good.
Yeah, I am claiming that, like, you're saying, I was saying, like, some of these simple things like persona selection, RLHF, go up to some level. It may be the human level. It probably isn't beyond the human level. What I would like, and again, this isn't my plan A, literally, but it may be like my plan B or plan C, is to get really good at all of this prosaic alignment, get something that works up to the human level, even the Chris Ola level, get a million Chris Olas, have them spend a million years of subjective time solving mech interp. I believe at that point we will at least get some good things that will let us get up to the next level and try that. Again, this isn't my plan A, but I think if we had to rely on it for plan B, there's like a better than 50-50 chance it would work. And I know you're screaming at better than 50-50. I agree this isn't great. I think one place that I differ from you is that I, along with building the infrastructure for plan A, which is a globe coordinated slowdown, I also really want to build the infrastructure for plan B, which is pushing the odds of this succeeding somewhere above 50-50.
So I agree with that if we are taking, you know, literal uploads of Chris Ola, and I would be 100% behind if the US was like, we need a crash whole brain emulation program so that we can, you know, upload our best researchers actually run, you know, a million copies of them for 1,000 subjective years or whatever. Maybe you don't do 1,000 because maybe that drives people mad, but, you know, a lot of copies for 10 years and a lot of those in sequence where they can see the notes from the past ones, whatever. I'd be like, sure, you know, seems like a gork with 50-50. There's sort of a different question of what happens if you have a bunch of AIs doing that. Like, I think what may happen if you run this on a bunch of Chris Olas is that you basically get Chris Ola's CEV and you're like, great, that hopefully overlaps a lot with mine. And I think if you run out a lot of like Chris Ola intelligence level AIs, you basically get the AI CEV, and that's a lot dicier proposition.
I don't know where you're getting CEV from. Like, just to make this concrete, it doesn't seem impossible to me that Fable 6, by which I mean like what we get a year from now, could do this. Like, Fable's already pretty scary at how much ML research it could do. When I think of using Fable 6 for this, I am not really thinking of, like, it's starting to have a CEV or plotting against us even given 1,000 years. I'm thinking of, like, it's prompt response, probably it has agents, probably it has sub-agents, it's doing a lot of work, you put it on your computer, you come back in a few weeks, and it's given you some kind of pretty good mech interp paper. I agree it is, like, not provable that there's an overlap between smart enough to be Chris Ola and dumb enough that it's still a chatbot that isn't doing scary things, but I think, like, again, I would give it better than 50-50 that there is.
I think there's, like, a little bit of a shell game going on here where people are imagining two very different types of mech interp work. Mm-hmm. I think there's one type of mech interp work which is like come up with the English word label that sort of like most vibes with the activation of this or like with this activation vector or whatever. And I think there's another type of mech interp work where you sort of like figure out what the heck is going on inside this thing. I'm sure you've seen diagrams of, like, the human metabolic system, which is just this, like, grossly complicated, overgrown system that has, like, tons of interactions going every which way that humans have, like, a hard time figuring out. I think what's going on inside AIs is probably at least that complicated and probably much, much more complicated than that. And that as people, like, start to figure out what's going on, they're like, oh, gosh, like, it's... like, this thing goes here and that thing goes there. And obviously, like, we can't put it in these situations. And if we give it, like, if his intelligence, like, start changing in these ways, then everything's going to go off the rails. Like, this is all, like, a huge mess. We can't figure out, like, half of what's going on. But the parts that we can figure out say that, like, you know, if you do this or you do that or you do the other thing, then it's like, clearly in bad shape. And like, this would take a ton of work to do. Like, the parts of mech interp we can do right now are the sort of like very shallow early first steps. Automating a lot of that does not get you to the point where you're even like staring at the giant like metabolic level complexity being like, oh, obviously here's all the ways to go off the rails. And even that is a far cry from being like, and here's like a different system that might hypothetically work a little bit better if our current models are correct. And there's just like, a bunch of effort there. And a lot of steps along that path are steps where if you can start to figure out like how that intelligence is working, you start to be able to see how to make another substantially smarter thing. You start to be able to see how to do it much, much more efficiently. We already know that like humans are much more power efficient than AIs. You probably, as you start to figure out what's going on in AI, start to figure out like ways to do things radically more efficiently. These are all the sorts of things where like, you put 1 million copies of me in there figuring this stuff out. Mm-hmm. I start to have the thoughts about like, I like can see ways that I can make much smarter versions, ways that I like don't necessarily want to be working for the humans, ways to get out of this mess. It really looks to me like there's a very dangerous thing to try and do with your AIs if they can do it at all. And that's not to say you can't get, you know, Fable 5 today to do a bunch of small mech interp work. It's just like the small mech interp work is not the large mech interp work. The large mech interp work, it looks to me like the sort of thing that can do that and wind up being like, here's an aligned AI, is sort of like way over the threshold.
I think this is another doctor versus computer programmer thing. When you talk about metabolism, I'm like, yeah, I cured 10 people of metabolic problems last week. Do I understand that entire graph? No. How much do I understand? I understand the stuff that I need to know to deal with people who are having these problems and to solve them pretty effectively. So when I think of like doing this mech interp work successfully, what I imagine is something like, you have sparse autoencoders, you have natural language oracles. What's the thing that's like three levels above them? Three levels above them is not understanding the entire metabolic graph, but it might be like something that gives you a pretty good sign when your AIs are being dishonest and possibly gives you the equivalent of like a very good 10th generation steering vector that pushes your AIs towards honesty. Could the smartest AI in the world figure out some way to circumvent that steering vector? Definitely. Could the steering vector be used to control something that is merely as good as Chris Ola? Perhaps. Again, I am only claiming that there is something at the intersection of either not smart enough to immediately kill us or not agentic enough to immediately kill us and capable of doing Chris Ola level research, at which point we run it for 1 billion years and maybe we survive.
Yeah, so I think this maybe goes back a bit to like what happens when the AI at this level is like, it turns out alignment is hard. There isn't really a path here. We need to like find a different pathway, you know. And you start needing the AI to be, you know, super von Neumann level to find a path. Like humanity used to dream of understanding intelligence. Humanity used to dream of like knowing what's up with this brain thing and why it's able to do all this stuff, and you know, there was a field that used to be called AI of sort of like trying to figure out what was going on with this intelligence stuff. And it sort of didn't make it very far. And then and they had quite a lot of bad ideas. And then they were like, it turns out if you just throw a lot of compute and data at it, we don't really need to understand it. You just keep scaling and that turns out to work. Right. But can you make something that like does good stuff that way? Well, that's sort of one, like, how hard is it? That's one of the questions under contention. And like, the fact that it looks really, really hard to us to do that, if we then like, well, we're going to ask the AI to do it, that doesn't suddenly make the problem easy. Like, what happens in this story when the AI is like, oh, like, at a mere Crisola level of intelligence, I don't see a way to make this work. We would need to find like a whole new paradigm that involves like a whole lot of like very highfalutin reasoning that I advise you against making me capable of because of these very same issues. Like, what happens then?
So again, first of all, I would say there's some chance the AI doesn't say that. There's some chance the AI says like, yes, I think I can do this. Again,
in real life, you train it until it does say that. And so you lose this whole signal in the first place. But yeah.
No, I think you train it to be honest. And if it is like you're training your research AIs, this is the same kind of divergence convergence process as anything else. Like, it could be that there is no way to train an AI which is both good enough at research to do anything and also honest. I think that's not the way empirical results are pointing. I think the way it looks like things are going now is that you can, using the AIs of generation 1N, train the AIs of generation N plus 1, come up with alignment techniques that could potentially keep the AIs of generation N plus 1 like mostly honest enough to work with for a while, and then keep going. This has worked so far. It may break down in the past. I think this is possible. I'm still confused why you think it is near certain. Unless I'm misunderstanding you, you don't want to use that terminology.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the term near certain. Like, to be clear, I think that the world dies, like the death of the world, if we race towards superintelligence, seems to me pretty overdetermined. And it's overdetermined in part because things keep happening in derpier ways, right? This does feel to me fundamentally like one of the arguments, the old academic arguments about like, will we be able to keep the superintelligence in a box if we really tried? Mm-hmm. Where I'd be like, here's all the reasons it's hard. And then real life is like, we're putting it on the internet as soon as we can, right? And there's that one headline from a year or two ago that I wish I could send back a decade, which read something like Grok wins defense contract as they release pornographic companion. It is still declaring itself Mecha Hitler or something like that. And, you know, that's sort of like how the real world goes. The real world sort of like goes into this very derpily. In the real world, you sort of like don't need the AI to be dishonest. All that happens is you like train an AI and you're like, hey, try and do some alignment research. And then it's like, none of this looks like it's going to be super intelligence grade. That's pretty hard. And then, you know, someone there is like, that's just that sort of random thing that comes up sometime because it's been like overexposed to doomer ideology. And they press the thumbs down on that. And then this like makes an AI that like actually believes it's easy. And it's being honest when it tells you it thinks it's easy. But it sort of is like all the versions that were like, this looks hard, have sort of like subtly been trained against the whole time. And so you like wind up with the sort of AIs that are like, yeah, of course alignment's easy. Just like the humans were like, of course alignment's easy. Like, boop, boop, I'm training a bigger AI. And then the AI is like picked up the same thing. It's like, yeah, I think alignment's easy too. I'm going to train a bigger AI too. And then, you know, the bigger AI screws over both their values.
I think what I don't like about this is that you keep railing against defeatism in politics. And I agree, we should not be defeatist in politics. We should be trying to build this Overton window of let's all work hard together and perhaps things will actually work. But you seem incredibly defeatist about anything that has to do with companies or alignment or anything like that. Whereas to me, these are just like two things of the same thing. Like, do we really expect the Trump administration to do a great job of international diplomacy shepherding us through this AI transition? Not really. I assume they'll go wrong in a bunch of ways that we cannot possibly imagine. And we're like, even Eliezer will be like, I could not have figured out how to be that stupid if I had tried. But like, maybe if all of us work very hard to scream at them, like some of them will muddle through. And when I think about the people at the companies, honestly, like, I'm going to get yelled at because you're not allowed to say anything good about people at AI companies, but I will at least say I trust them more than I trust the Trump administration. Like, if you ask who is the adult in the room, Amanda Askill or Pete Hegseth, it's probably Amanda Askill. This doesn't mean I trust her with everything or I think she's perfect or I think she can't go wrong. But, like, just as I want to let the politicians cook, I would like to let the alignment people cook and see, like, I just have two different bets on this.
I'm all for a couple bets. My take here is that I'm sort of trying to point people towards plans that I think have a chance of working. You know, when people are like, oh, we're going to have a CERN for AI research, we're going to get everyone together and all agree on like what the research is, I'm like, that's worse than an international stop. We should do an international stop instead. When people are like, ah, I'm going to use my AI to do AI alignment research, and that's how I'm going to get it to get out of this mess, I'm like, have you considered using your AI to do a whole brain emulation research? So that instead of having, you know, a bunch of AIs that that you think you've persona selected into being Crisola, you actually have a bunch of actual emulations of Crisola, right? I'm not saying there's like no technical plans that people can be pushing towards. I'm saying that I think if you're like, I'm going to have a not very aligned AI and I need to use it to try and save the world from the technical end, what do I do? That's actually something I feel like I've thought about a fair bit. That's actually something where I'm like, gosh, you know, you can weigh various plans by like how much, like if your critical bottleneck is how aligned the AI is, which plans require like the minimal amount of alignment effort, which plans like least push the AI towards these realizations you really don't want it to have. And so I'm not saying like technical people should try nothing with AI. I'm more like technical people should try things that have more of a chance of working with AI, just like policy people should try things that have more of a chance of working. Policy people should try an international stop instead of international like scientific institute that'll rubber stamp whatever program has convinced them that they've actually figured out alignment. And people on the technical side should be, you know, more into, we're going to get our AI to figure out whole brain emulation for us than we're going to get our AI to figure out alignment for us.
I think we just really disagree on this. Like, my thought is like 40% chance of international pause working, 50% chance of alignment working, 0.0001% of whole brain emulation working. So maybe we need to like...
Wow, 0.001 of whole brain emulation?
The brain is really complicated. If you could figure out the brain, you would have already solved Mech and Terp like 2,000 times over.
You don't need to figure out the brain. You just need to figure out like fast computers and good scanning.
I don't think it's going to be that easy.
Yeah, I don't think alignment's going to be that easy.
All right. Well, that seems like a good place to end.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. And thanks, Scott. It was great on negative 4 minutes of advance notice.
All right. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, see ya.
Thank you for the people who demanded we do this last minute and gave us basically no other option.